Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
And welcome to another edition of Wiener's Barbecue on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Tyler Noble. Daryl Wiener is off again this week, and I'll be joined by Wilson Wong in a little bit. Last weekend, largely about championships, whether they were national or conference championships. The rugby nationals were held here at UBC. We had the field hockey nationals going on in Victoria, which the UBC Thunderbirds won, and also some conference championships in soccer as well. So we'll have complete coverage of all those things. Very busy past weekend here on campus for UBC athletics. But we're going to begin the show with some news that broke yesterday regarding the UBC football program. The sports department here at UBC announced that head coach Ted Gavaya will not be returning to the program for the 2010 season. He was at the helm for 4 years, starting in 2006 as a head coach. He was the offensive coordinator before that, but each season has, at least in the standings, been a step backwards, and the school has decided to make a change. Joining us on the line right off the top of the show is Athletic Director Bob Phillip. Bob, thanks for taking the time this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Just explain it for us, the decision to release Ted Gavaya after four seasons, most of them losing records.
It's always a tough decision. I think Ted came here as an assistant coach and was promoted to head coach, as you said, 4 years ago, and worked very hard at trying to turn the program around. The program has been struggling, as you know, for a number of years now. I think 4-4s have been about the top we've had, maybe 5-3. And our record this year, 3-5, was a little distorted because we did win a couple of games by forfeit. But we just felt that we've got to get it right, and we think that the football team should be doing better than it is in terms of wins and losses. And so we decided at this point it was time to go in a different direction in terms of coaching.
One of the things that always comes up whenever you see a coach being fired, the questions are, did he have the talent to work with? Or are you saying that the talent was there, but perhaps something going on with the decisions by the coaching staff has led to the record on the field?
I think in Canadian university sports, and probably in the U.S. as well, the job is really threefold. The first, of course, you have to know X's and O's in the case of football, or in another sport, you have to certainly know the strategies involved in the sport. But it's a big part of it is getting the talent, and so it's a combination of things. If the talent wasn't there, then that's the responsibility as well. I think we had some pretty good players, but I think it's just a combination. You're responsible for putting the team on the field, and then you're responsible for how that team performs. And this was a four-year window, and we thought that we just think that at this point, in terms of wins and losses, we should be doing better.
That first season, 2006, Coach Gavaya did lead the Thunderbirds into a playoff appearance. It was a loss in the first round to Saskatchewan. He had Blake Smelzer at the helm back then as his quarterback. He had Chris Chidsky as well as the running back. Instability at the quarterback position, I think, was one of the big factors for the success for the Thunderbirds after that. Do you think Coach Gavaya had enough opportunity to try out the people that followed, whether it was Doug Goldsby, Mark McVeigh, or more recently Billy Green? Do you think he was given enough time?
I think that, well, obviously we do, but I think that you're right. I mean, it's very difficult. The quarterbacking position is a tough one. I think in the second year there was an injury partway early on in the season in Regina that really hurt, and we had to bring in somebody maybe a little too early. And but the decision as to who plays quarterback is the head coach's, and that's just part of the performance of the team. I think we struggled a bit offensively in the last few years. I thought we played pretty well on defense. We showed some flashes. I think we've got some players that have a big future ahead of them, and but we are where we are right now, and I think we have to, you know, we're trying to move forward. UBC's football program, if you look back to 97 when we won the Vanier Cup, we've slowly descended down, and right now we're not competitive with the top teams in our conference, and that's not where we think UBC should be.
Going forward now, there's still up in the air as to whether the Thunderbirds are going to become an NCAA team like Simon Fraser. How crucial is it to be that you have a replacement that will be able to adapt to a four-down game should that decision be made?
most of the coaches that have that are in BC right now have been are familiar with high school football in the province. And as you know, high school football in BC is all American four down football. So I don't think while the game is quite different, most of the coaches that we're aware of are adaptable to both, and I think have played both or coached at both at some point in time. So certainly, it would be something that will be considered because, as you said, we don't have, we don't have a clear indication as to where we may go. And also, when we play Simon Fraser in the Trumbull, which we're planning to do on a continuing basis, we'll be playing that game under U.S. rules. And we've, in the past, even when we've always, not always, but in the recent history, played in Canada, we've played a number of U.S. schools during that time, and we play U.S. rules when we do that. So most of the coaches are adaptable to both.
Dino Jeremiah, the defensive coordinator, he has been appointed as the team's interim head coach. Is he in the running for the head coaching job?
We've indicated to Dino that if he's interested in that we'd be interested in talking to him, certainly. And as you know, we appointed Ted. Ted was an assistant coach. We didn't go through an interview process. We just interviewed the two assistant coaches. Mm-hmm. So Dino, I think, is going to be interested in it. And if he is, we'll certainly be interested in talking to him. He's been really, I think, a really solid person for us since he's been here.
Not that I expect you to name any other names, but are there other candidates that you're eyeing at this point?
None that I'd like to say. I mean, it's pretty early in this process. We're putting together an evaluation committee, and we'll probably be able to say who's going to be on that. We don't want to take a long time to do this. On the other hand, it's not that urgent that we rush into it. Ideally, we'd like to have somebody named before Christmas, and I'm pretty sure we can do that, even if they're not prepared to start right away. But it's nice if a part of, as you mentioned earlier, getting players and recruiting is important. So we do have a number of players returning, but we're always out there looking for new players, and we want to make sure that people know who's going to be running the show as quickly as possible.
There have been some rumblings floating around out there that Ted was maybe having to deal with some obstacles beyond his control that may have affected recruitment and therefore the play on the field. I'll throw some examples at you. The condition of Thunderbird Stadium, the quality of the playing field in particular, the fact that it's shared with concerts, training camp the last 2 years has been had to be held elsewhere, Abbotsford, Kamloops. Those kinds of things, especially in an 8-game season, you could argue might have an impact on how the team performs. What were some of the steps that the school took to try and address some of those concerns?
I don't think that's a factor in the product on the field. 1997, mm-hmm. We had some major concerts on the stadium. We moved our training camp out of town up to Kelowna that year, or in Abbotsford that year, and they trained there for 10 days, and we won the Vanier Cup. The field was pretty muddy when we played Calgary that year in the final, and our guys really thrived on that. So I don't think that's why we're not successful. We've been running concerts and having that same field for a number of years, and we've been successful. But we're at the point right now where we've made a commitment to putting an artificial field in the stadium, because in the last few years we've done that for a lot of sports. Soccer, of course, over the years has played in the mud, and the weather seems to be getting worse here in terms of the amount of rain we're getting. So we need to do something about that. We've always had problems with the practice field, and I think that, you know, we're definitely going to be addressing that. But I don't think that's there are some issues that we have at UBC in terms of academic standing, and some coaches, not some coaches, but some people outside say that's a hindrance, and we look at that as a positive. UBC is a choice of many students. It's a great academic school, and a lot of people want to come here, and we have a broad-based admissions program. Housing's another issue, and there are a lot of people that want to get into housing, and we probably couldn't in the past guarantee as many spots as we'd like to. It affects all sports, not just football, but football has more players. But, you know, there's nothing out there that hasn't been there for a while, and I don't think that we were winning under the same conditions. Maybe we need to do some more things to make things better, and we're going to do that. But that I don't think is the reason why we were 1-7 or 3-5, whatever we officially were.
Right. Bob, appreciate your time this afternoon, and we'll wish you the best of luck in the search for a new head coach.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Bob Phillip, the athletic director for the UBC Thunderbirds, following the decision yesterday to release head coach Ted Gavaya. He will not be returning to the program to coach for a fifth straight season in 2010. In his four seasons at the helm, Gavaya finished with a total regular season record of 12-20. He led the Thunderbirds to the playoffs just once during his tenure. That was a 2006 loss in the Canada West semifinals to the Saskatchewan Huskies. UBC finished 4-4 that year. ever since then, it's been steps backwards. 3-5 in 07, 2-6 last year, and at the conclusion of the regular season, it looked like 1-7 UBC getting awarded a 3-5 record because of forfeits that were awarded in their favor in the games played against Manitoba, the first one, and the season opener against Simon Fraser. But in reality, only one win picked up, that being the road game at Alberta in early September. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get more analysis on this from Jim Mullen, sports director at CKNW, News Talk 980. As well as play-by-play voice of Canada West football on Shaw TV. We'll get his thoughts on this. He's certainly been following the UBC Thunderbirds very closely, and I'm sure we'll have some strong opinions about what has happened yesterday here at UBC. Stay with us here on Wiener's Barbecue. Tyler Noble and Wilson Wong still to come, filling in for Daryl Wiener here on CITR 101.9 FM.
CITR's third annual DJ competition is almost upon us.
The party is at the Pit Pub at UBC on Thursday, November 12th.
We want DJs of all styles and genres to show off their mad skills. You don't have to be a UBC student, just a killer spinner. The competition is going to be judged by five of Vancouver's best DJs.
And yes, there will be prizes. That's right, it's a no-rules, free-for-all DJ fight to the death with killer prizes.
Well, actually, there are three rules.
One, you must send a demo to enter. It must be under 30 minutes long. Showcase your unique flavor, be original.
Get your submissions in right away to ensure your spot. Send an MP3 file to thatdjcontest2009@gmail.com or bring hard copies to the station located on the second floor of the sub.
2. The DJ playing order is determined randomly.
3. Your score will be determined by three things: our judge's opinion, your poll, and the crowd response.
So get spinning, because CHR wants to showcase you at this year's DJ competition.
Prizes provided by Beat Street Records, El Cartel, and Lung McQuaid.
Tyler Noble and Wilson Wong back with you, filling in for Daryl Wiener on Wiener's Barbecue on another rainy afternoon here in Vancouver. Talking about UBC football, the decision yesterday from the athletics department here at UBC to release head coach Ted Gavaya after four seasons at the helm, 12-20 regular season record. Wilson, were you stunned by the news?
I don't think anyone was really stunned by the news. Yeah. Just by the fact that this year it seemed to come out that the athletics department and the football team maybe weren't quite on the same page, and certainly when you look at Ted's record, hey, you know, if it keeps getting worse, there's a pattern there, and you just can't, if you can control it, you can't have that happen.
We just heard from Bob Phillip, the athletic director here at UBC, with more on that and the decision and other things happening in Canada West football these days. We're joined on the line now by Jim Mullen. He's the sports director at CKNW AM 980 here in Vancouver, also play-by-play voice for Canada West football on Shaw TV. Jim, thanks for the time this afternoon.
Anytime, guys.
Well, what do you make of Bob's comments there?
Well, I thought some of it was interesting. I know that... I had an interesting talk with Wally Buono this afternoon, talking about Ted's fate. And he was absolutely right in one sense when he was sharing his thoughts with me about coaching. That you put a lot of effort in, you make a lot of sacrifices, you leave a lot on the table, and people don't really know what goes on behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, people don't care. They just want to see the result that's on the field at the end of the day and the result that's in the standings. And I think that's the situation that we have here, is that you've got a 3-5 football coach. And I'll stick to that 3-5, because the one thing about the UBC program over the last few years is that they have played by the rules. They haven't played on the edge of the rules. So I think the 3-5 is warranted. I found it interesting that Bob pointed back to the mid-90s, and you know what? The game has changed in the Canada West now as we're approaching 2010. It's very different. The facilities across the 27 teams in the CIS are almost, I would place UBC about 25th. Maybe 24th at best out of the 27 teams in the CIS. Mm-hmm. When it comes to football facilities, and Manitoba is going to get a lot better with the new stadium that's being dropped into Winnipeg through the Asper family. So clearly, the worst facilities for the football program programs in the Canada West will belong to UBC as long as they're in the Canada West. So I think that's a problem. I think there was a bit of a misnomer there, too, about training camp. I know that the football program only had 3 days approved for training camp the night before that they were taking off for training camp, and it was a last-minute reprieve that got them up to training camp in Kamloops for a full week. Facilities are a huge issue. Whenever you hear a Division I football coach talk about taking over a new program, one of the first things they talk about is that we are going to work on facilities. And unfortunately, Thunderbird Stadium has been left to rot. Tyler Codron, a guy that could have been the leader of the defense, untouched. His knee blows because that facility isn't kept up properly. And I know there's been artificial turf there promised for the last 4 years, and yeah, it hasn't been delivered during Ted's tenure. So, you know, when you try to get students and recruits into residence, and you have 42 recruits, and you can only get 12 of them into residence, you know that something's wrong for football.
Yeah, and that's notwithstanding the disaster that happened when the men's soccer nationals were hosted here at UBC a couple of years ago, when they tried to play the quarterfinals at Thunderbird Stadium and had to move the entire soccer pitch several feet because the field was so soft and muddy. So, yeah, that certainly can't be an attractive option for players when they're deciding between schools.
Well, it's all a question of choices, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And UBC Athletics has made the choice to make their investment into men's basketball, and sometimes it's been at the price of other sports that are at the university. Certainly, there's a strong contingent within the athletic department that represents men's basketball, and as a result, I think football-like resources are being funneled over to basketball, and basketball-like resources are being funneled over to football. And at the end of the day, when you take a look at that record that is on the board, that's what you're going to end up as a result. They don't at the University of Saskatchewan reel back resources in terms of the Huskies program. Certainly, there's been an allocation of resources and a strong representation by the alumni with the University of Calgary to get Blake Neal in there and make that team competitive. It's a matter of choices. UBC has made the choice not to make football a priority. Certainly, it's a great place to get alumni money from and take it into the common pool and then divide it up whatever way they like. But at the end of the day, it hasn't benefited football. And as a result, you've got this. I mean, Bob's working on his seventh coach now since his tenure here, taking over at UBC. And it's nice to point back to 1997, but for the last 12 years, the football program slid off the map.
I asked Bob in the interview whether the quarterbacking situation was given enough time. Obviously, when Blake Smelzer left, the decision was made to go with Doug Goldsby, and then he got hurt. That forced Mark McVay into a position where I think the results would indicate he was put into a position where he wasn't able to succeed. And now we have Billy Green, who's only played a season and a half. Do you think he's had enough chance? Because the inability of the offense to put together sustained drives was really a problem this entire season.
I think one of the biggest mistakes Ted made along the way, and he might be the first to tell you, is not grooming a true successor to Blake Smelzer. Mm-hmm. He certainly, in that first year and in the 2 years when he was an assistant coach, worked with Blake very, very well. I think he optimized Blake's ability as a quarterback, but there wasn't a great investment made in who that number two guy was. And Goldsby looked to be the guy, but he ended up being brittle. I mean, even at the CFL level, there's Goldsby, who should have been rightly playing with the UBC Thunderbirds this year. He was an undrafted player and then signed away by the Montreal Alouettes, which put the Thunderbirds behind the eight ball on the defense. Three games in, he's injured at the CFL level. So, Mark McVay is like going down to number three in the depth chart. And, he cost them when it came to certain key points last year.
Jim, as you said, this is, I believe you said, the seventh head coach Bob is working on. and the last three, I believe, only got 4 years. And there's always the question of, hey, you know, if a guy comes in, should he get at least 5 years to see how his first recruiting cycle goes? So, I mean, is this sort of a disturbing pattern that you're seeing from UBC?
I totally agree with you, Wilson. I think you have to see the college quarterback, college coach, rather, through to the 5 year mark, because you have to see what the full graduate class is coming in, the class that he's recruited. You have to see the change in culture from one to another. It does not happen overnight. I think there's a misunderstanding here. From certain individuals in the athletic department to think that you can change the culture of a football team but you're dealing with, you know, 70, 80, 90 kids, and it takes a long time to turn something around that hasn't necessarily been headed in the right direction. Ted Gavaya, in my mind, deserved that fifth year to see what his full recruiting class was all about, and I think it's really unfortunate that that the whole process was cut short. Surely if he did not have a playoff season or a winning season, he would have been deserving of a firing or having his contract run out at the end of next season. I think they did it prematurely in Ted Gavaya's case. And honestly, in retrospect, I think they did it prematurely in Lou Delorier's case as well.
Moving on to some more positive thoughts, I'll just get your take very quickly. Jim, you called the Alberta-Calgary semifinal game over the weekend. Saskatchewan also advancing to the Hardy Cup after a 53-23 win over Regina. Calgary dominant, 45-13. Who do you like in the Canada West Championship?
Well, I was asked that question earlier today, and it was really hard for me to come up with an answer, but I will go on the side of the Saskatchewan Huskies only because they're playing at home, mm-hmm. and because Eric Glavich, the quarterback of the Calgary Dinos, for some reason had a problem of dealing with the swirling prairie wind that was in McMahon Stadium in Calgary. Now, the forecast is for 2 degrees and overcast in Saskatoon on Saturday afternoon. So the weather and the wind may not play a big role in this, but you know, I think this is a pick 'em. I think in some ways the move by Blake Neal to decide to go for the 2-point conversion in the second round of overtime in the very first game of the year, when Saskatchewan beat Calgary by 1 point in that game in double overtime, may work to his favor, because it may be that extra little bit of focus, that little bit of motivation that helps that Calgary Dinos team also focus on the goal ahead. The bottom line is, regardless of whatever prediction I make, I think that this has the ability to be a fantastic offensive game, because there are weaknesses in both defenses that both sides can take advantage of. I think Calgary can run the ball and use their motion all day long against that front seven of the Saskatchewan Huskies. And I think Lawrence Nixon and that talented receiving corps that the Huskies have can take advantage of a few young and weak spots in the secondary of the Huskies and go for the long ball. So this should be an interesting chess match. I expect a lot of points to be on the board at the end of the day.
We are certainly looking forward to it ourselves. Jim, we always appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Jim Mullen, sports director at CKNW and play-by-play voice of Canada West football on Shaw TV.
I always like having Jim on. He's fun.
He's willing to go there,
yeah,
more than
like that.
We are, probably. All right, we'll take a quick break, come back. Happier thoughts. Field hockey, we'll be talking about that in depth after the break, after an undefeated run through the Nationals in Victoria. And the UBC Thunderbirds national champions once again in women's field hockey. More on that coming up in a bit here on Wiener's Barbecue.
Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's 2 licensed establishments.
The Gallery Lounge is your location for a wide variety of draft beers at student-friendly prices. Come to the gallery for a relaxed atmosphere and great food, including the famous pizza pretzel. Fellow students provide the entertainment with weekly open mic and karaoke nights. The gallery is located on the main concourse of the sub and open Monday through Saturday till 1 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. All the things she been seeing. Guess you better find your
way back home. All right, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here. Wilson Wong and Tyler Noble standing in for your regular host, Daryl Wiener. He should be back soon because, you know, there'll be no one in to fill in for him at some point.
Yeah, yes. I got a rare day off on a Tuesday here, so I'm able to come in.
Yeah, so you better get back to work. But we're going to talk about a team that has finished their work and are celebrating long, long into the next month here, the women's field hockey team, they win their 12th, national championship, a record in Canadian university field hockey. So not only has the team won that national championship for this season, they sort of regained their position as Canada's sort of greatest field hockey program. And we've got one of the players, one of the star players for that team here, Robin Pendleton. You're smiling. You deserve an intro like that.
Thanks.
Tournament MVP. Yeah. How's that feel?
So CIS Tournament MVP, Robin Pendleton. And I'm just going to make lots of squeaking noises with your mic here.
There we go.
Yeah. Tell us how you feel.
It feels good, really good, to get the job done at Nationals. It's awesome. It's been a long time coming, I think, for a few of us. So it feels good to get it done.
Especially last year, UBC played well in the round robin. Got basically knocked out of the gold medal game with on the goal difference. And this must have been nice this year to be able to come back, claim your spot early in the gold medal game, or relatively early, and play a pretty brilliant game against Alberta.
Yeah, it's a tough tournament just the way it's set up. I mean, we played well last year, and I think having been in that position before, we all knew that we needed to come out strong. And I think winning our first two games put us in a good spot, definitely, to be in that gold medal game, kind of regardless of how our last game went. So that was good.
The gold medal game, 6-0 against Alberta, a team you're familiar with. As Hash Kanji said, this is a very good Alberta team that historically has done very well. But your team just came out so strong early and just kept building.
Yeah, I think Alberta had a tough day before. They had played two games and had, by chance, sort of made it into the final. So it was, I mean, we're all excited to play Alberta. We play a style that's kind of conducive to theirs. They play very spread out and structured, which is kind of how we play as well. So we knew how they play. We'd played against them. Probably that was, I think, our fifth game against them that season. So, yeah, it was exciting to play against them. And, I mean, they had, like I said, a long day before them. So it was good.
Can you tell us about that gold medal game and how it went for you? Elise Milosevic, I believe, scores 3 minutes in. Tell us about the start and then how that sort of built up for your team.
Yeah, I think after about, we scored in the first minute. So after that, there was no looking back. I mean, you can't ask for a better start than that. And I think that kind of just set the tone for the rest of the game. Like, six goals shared between five people, I think. Like, it was awesome.
For you and your teammates, it's sort of been an unusual year. You start off in Argentina on a tour, and then sort of in the middle of the year, a loss to, I believe, Calgary, and then some injury problems. Can you talk about how sort of your team went through all of those things and were able to come back together at the end of the year?
Yeah, it was definitely a season of highs and lows, I think. We lost to Alberta and we lost to Calgary, both games in Alberta. It's never good to lose, but I think it's good that we got those losses out of the way early in the season, and we knew that we could lose, so it was good to come into Nationals knowing that we had lost and we would have to work really hard in order to get those wins, so we didn't take anything for granted.
Is it extra sweet to win the tournament in Victoria? The Vikes are the Thunderbirds' main rival in field hockey, and you weren't able to come up with the title last year, but this year you did.
Yeah, I think absolutely. There's a great field hockey community in Victoria, and, I mean, winning in Victoria is never a bad thing, so.
Yeah.
Can you sort of describe the celebration after the game and what the ferry ride home was like?
I actually wasn't on the ferry ride home with everyone because I got drug tested and was on the next ferry. But
drug testing is always a good topic on this show, so we'll have to ask about that later. But, okay. But how was the celebration?
It was good. It was really sweet. There was like, I think pretty much everyone had someone there. Like, there was a good group of fans. Like, most of us are from BC, and we had one girl from PEI. Her parents were there, so it was awesome. It was pretty unreal. So just, yeah, there was tons of people watching. I don't think, probably the biggest crowd most of us have ever played in front of. So.
Should I ask about drug testing now?
Sure.
So what happens?
You basically have to, like, right after you win, someone comes tapping on your shoulder saying you're going to get drug tested. So that's fine. We know it was going to happen. It's supposedly random or whatever. So we just pound back a few waters, like, while the ceremonies are going on, and then go to the bathroom where one lady does about 20 minutes worth of paperwork, and you're trying to rush to get to the ferry and get back to your team because you've just won. But, yeah. You know, just take the time to get that done. And there's two girls that just lost the gold medal game sitting right next to you in a room. It's a little awkward, but...
Oh, wow. I didn't realize everybody would just be brought together like that.
Everyone's sitting there trying to make conversation.
Which, oh, no.
Yeah.
So we've heard from women's basketball and some of the swimmers that drug testing can become quite, you know, nerve-wracking. And people end up, like, staying in there for half an hour, an hour, because they're so nervous. Like,
yeah, that happened to the other girl I was doing with on our team, so she couldn't go, so we had to sit there and wait and let another girl go. So, I mean, yeah, you're peeing in front of someone. I guess for some people it's not easy, but just got to get her done.
Coming into the UBC program as a student transfer, getting to know the coach, Hash Kanji, he's led the Birds to 7 of the 12 titles in his 17 seasons at the helm of the program. Just your thoughts on Coach Kanji and how he's been able to bring the group together.
Yeah, it's been awesome, actually. Like, I'd played for Hash when I was in high school, so I've known him for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think, ultimately, he did bring the group together, which is the most important part. He's done a great job of recruiting a lot of talent. So it was a matter of us all coming together. He had Kimo Linders and Anthony Wright also helped out. So they were a lot of the tactical mind behind, I think, the whole operation. So, but it was great. Like, Hash knew when to step in and ask for help. And just coming together, like, he puts in so much work and just so much time. And I think we can all recognize that. So it was really important that he's there.
How big a goal was the goal that you scored in the final game, described as a confident strike from the center of the crease to put your team up 2-0 10 minutes in?
Yeah, it was good. I really think, like, after the first minute, we just took possession of the game, and it just all kind of came together. So yeah. We were just, yeah, possessing, and I don't, like, we had a lot of opportunities, and we finished them. That's how we got those 6 goals, I think, probably our biggest win of the season in the final. So that was good.
I wanted to ask you, actually. I was told that there was an amazing goal that was scored but was disallowed.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that one?
Yeah, it was, I mean, there was nothing wrong with it, to be honest. Like, we were already winning, I think, like, 4-0 at that point. It was in the second half. I wasn't in a place to argue with the ref over it. I mean, it wasn't even worth it to go there. So just one of those things you laugh off. And
But I want you to describe it, because I heard that it was pretty awe-inspiring.
Yeah, you could call it pretty. I guess I went around a couple defenders and just put it in the back of the net, so...
Yeah. Now, don't be modest. Can you, when Hash described it to me, it had like, you know,
fireworks,
it was very elaborate
going
fireworks going off. Pretty fancy stick work, I've been told. So can you sort of describe what you did?
Yeah, I don't even know. I just picked up the ball and went around a few people, put a few pulls right. I think I flipped it over one girl's stick, and then next thing I know, it's in the back of the net, but...
I heard that you, like, sort of dribbled the ball sort of on your stick sort of in midair and then did a swinging volley. I mean, that was what
was
he
Hash
told me.
Was watching the same game as me?
That's
Hash
great.
Hash might elaborate a
That's
bit.
That's great.
Okay, that's good. That's
I
good
don't know.
To know.
He's
yeah.
very proud of
yeah.
his players.
Yeah. So yeah, he was just saying that it was a very nice goal.
Yeah, no, it was pretty. So, yeah.
So this is the kind of silliness that we get on this show, even when Daryl's not here.
Yeah, that's important to know.
That is important.
It's not just Daryl.
Now, as you finish playing with UBC, what I mean, I always ask the seniors this question. It's What kind of things will you remember about your time as a Thunderbird? And what are some of the stories that you think you'll start telling people about your time as a Thunderbird?
Well, some of the more appropriate ones.
No, inappropriate. That's fine for the station as well.
I think just, like, we had, like, a great group, and especially this year, like, everyone got along so well, which I don't think is an easy thing when you put 16 girls and give them the same goal. I think I've been playing sports since I was, like, 5 years old, and this is probably one of the only times I've been on a team where everything has been, like, going in the same direction, so that's been great. Like, our preseason trip to Argentina, just some really fun times with everyone. I don't even know. That was good. So
Sam Smith told us that you guys made friends with a lot of stray dogs.
I'm a dog lover myself. So yeah, definitely met a lot of neat dogs. Still pretty scruffy, but yeah, they were good. Yeah, it was a really good trip, and I think it set the tone for the season. So that's something I'll always remember.
Yeah. And what will you remember about playing with your teammates? Who are some of the best friends that you have on this team?
I grew up on the island with Elise, so we definitely go way back, and it's always great to play with her. Hopefully we'll be together next season as well. But just, I don't know, like everyone, you kind of grow up in a provincial program where you play either against or with all these same people, so I think it's great to just be with them. And even like with the national team camp tonight, we were joking around being like, for our short corners, like, oh, you didn't play for UBC, you can't be part of our short corners. Like, we've already got it down. So it's good. And I've got another year or two hopefully left. So I'm just really looking forward to playing with this group of rookies as well. They're an awesome bunch and just so talented. So it'll be neat to continue on with them, hopefully.
I mistook you for a fifth year senior.
No, I got fourth year of school, third year of eligibility. So
oh, okay. Yep. That was my mistake.
Hopefully I'll be around for a bit more.
Those are allowed here.
I apologize for that.
That's okay.
Because I sort of ended your career 2 years early.
On a high note, though.
Oh, yeah, that's good. But
did Hash tell you something you didn't tell me?
No, one of those things where you're trying to book like a fifth year senior as well, you know? You kind of want someone who's ending their career.
Yeah, I know, for sure.
So I apologize.
That's okay.
This is the retraction part of it.
Yes, there's usually one of these per show, actually. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming on. We got Hash coming on next. Well, it's a recorded interview. Yeah. So feel free to stay and listen if you want. But congratulations for winning this championship, and glad you're able to come back for the next 2 years.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Robin. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's Robin Pendleton of the UBC women's field hockey team. And they, of course, are celebrating their CIS field hockey national championship. And, of course, I visited with their head coach earlier today, Hash Kanji. And he looked more exasperated than really happy. So it was kind of interesting to chat with him about the weekend. And we spoke earlier today in his office. All right, Hash, first of all, congratulations on the win.
Thanks very much, Wilson. Honestly, it feels very, very good. I'm not sure if you saw the interview on the CIS website, but I remember saying to the guy, I'm relieved. But you know what? I have to explain that because on Saturday morning, with three games remaining, any two of the five teams still had a chance to make it to the final. And, Friday night was a very, very long night. But you know what? Alberta helped us out. They beat Victoria, which in essence knocked out Victoria. And so then there were four. And we took care of Toronto because we were a little bit more relaxed. And that helps, you know, with the University Sports, I think being relaxed and just being focused helps. So we took care of Toronto. And then after that, obviously, the team went home and I sat and watched the Guelph Alberta game, wondering which of those two teams were going to end up meeting. And Alberta, to their credit, just absolutely rose to the occasion and stunned everybody by beating Guelph as well. So at the end of the day, it was us and Alberta.
Alberta is a team you're very familiar with, playing them in conference. So tell us about what happened, the 6-0 score against the Pandas.
Well, it goes a little deeper than that. In 05, here at UBC, when we were hosting, we were a very strong team, but we lost a couple of our key players. We had lost our captain, Jesse Dennis, right in the final, but also to compound issues, we'd lost Tyler Flexman the day before to a really bad ankle injury. So we ended up playing Alberta without two of our strongest players, and it went to strokes, and we lost on strokes. So we had there's some memories there, there's some history there that we knew that Alberta's a strong side, and I don't want to sound. I think it's important that we point out that Alberta's got a gold and two silvers in 4 years, and nobody's taken them seriously, and perhaps they've shown now that they deserve to be taken seriously. When we prepared for them on Sunday, we knew, we talked about the history, we talked about their ability to rise to the occasion, and we had to be at our very best behavior. And Elise Milosevic gave us the perfect start by scoring in the first minute. That made us relax a little bit. There was a 10-minute patch there that was kind of a little bit off. We didn't play our style, but the second goal even made it easier, so...
When it comes to these types of big games, the championship games, how hard is it to get that type of start?
You want to start well, but I think the start well means the first 10 or 15 minutes so that you get into the groove. You get into the sorts of things you're going to be doing for 70 minutes. And if you don't have a good start, like say, for example, you give up a goal, then you're sort of saying, oh my gosh, we've got to score two. And the mindset's a little bit different. And field hockey is not a big scoring game. It can be at the higher levels, but not necessarily a big scoring game. And so every goal is important. And you can imagine Alberta, after we got the second one, they had to consider that they had to score three to beat us. And our history with them this year is that I think, and I haven't got the stats in front of me, but the two games we played against them here at UBC in the last of the Canada-West exchanges, we beat them 9-1. So we knew we had the ability to score some goals against them, and that gave us a little bit of confidence. And the kids were relaxed, and the coaching staff and the support staff, we made sure that we didn't put too much undue pressure on them. We wanted to be there to have them on task, but not sort of afraid of going out there and having a bit of fun.
Can you tell me when that first goal went in, how that changed the game for your team and how you focused the players for the rest of the game?
Absolutely. Wilson, we've got this little mantra that we do. If we get scored on or if we score, the next 5 minutes are the most important. So if you've been scored on, then I think it's really critical that you maintain some possession, build some momentum, and work from there. Conversely, when you score a goal, you want to make sure that you don't let up and give that lead away. So that 5 minutes, a 7 minute works for us. We maintain possession, we build the ball up, we don't turn it over unnecessarily, and we keep our structure, and that does help us.
As you said, after that first goal, Alberta's probably thinking, hey, we need two. Absolutely. And then after the second, three goals.
Yes, right.
So how did you build on that momentum?
Well, I think the things that we knew that was Alberta had played two games and the two games of their lives the previous day. So we knew they were going to be a little low on gas, which is what happened to us against Victoria. We'd played Guelph and Alberta on Thursday and met Victoria Friday morning, and that was tough. Three games for these young athletes in our sport now is very, very difficult because the midfielders, the workhorses, they're running anywhere from 7 to 10 kilometers in a game. Now, running 30 Ks in 24 hours is not a great thing at the high speeds and the stopping and the starting. The wear and tear is pretty high on the kids. So, it was important that against Alberta that we just kind of held ourselves together and didn't get out of our structure.
As the game was ending, mm-hmm. and you knew you were going to win, what were some of the things you thought about as you look back on what kind of year it was?
Yeah. You know what? I did. Unfortunately for me, I actually, when we got the fourth goal, for example, there was still 15 minutes, and I'm just thinking, well, there's very little chance that Albert is going to score five on us. And I was able to get my bench out, which was huge. I mean, I was very, very happy for a couple of the first years that got a chance to play in a final, in a game that, you know, was in hand, and so they got a chance to taste what that was like. I reflected on our games against Alberta, you know, in 05, where, you know, it didn't go well for us. I reflected on last year when we got knocked out in goal difference. Yeah, that stuff, you know, you wouldn't normally go through that because in a game your focus is very much what's going on at the time, but we did get a chance to reflect back. The tour to Argentina was huge for us. We learned so much and we developed so much as a group. So I was able to sort of think back and say, you know, that was worthwhile. It's a lot of hard work and a lot of anguish, but when you win, it makes it all worthwhile.
Before we started the interview, you had casually mentioned what a weird year this has been, and I remember when I came in earlier to talk to you. You had all sorts of roster problems because there were players injured, players hurt. I think you had to find a couple of extra players at least to sort of fill out your roster. Can you tell me about how it went from that and how you built on that to accomplishing this feat here?
Sport is weird. From this tournament, the tournament itself was bizarre because who would have thought we would have met Alberta in the final? So on that note, it was probably a good thing. But when we started the year, you know, we did have the issue with Di Roma, and I would have loved to have had Di in the mix, but that opened up a chance for somebody else. And we had to juggle some people around, and I think it's really, really important that I recognize Christian Burt, who, you know, has some injury issues, and between her and Sarah McCauley, both starters, in my opinion, we were trying to figure out who the center half was going to be. So they both battled for that position, and we found a niche for both of them. Kristen ended up playing at center mid and did a fantastic job this year and should have, in my opinion, been on the tournament 11. Sarah McCauley was equally fantastic at right mid, and she had a brilliant year. And, you know, so, it, you know, sometimes things that happen that are bad open up doors for other kids, and these kids just stepped in and did a wonderful job. The leaders of this team were Christian Harrington, who I think has had five fantastic years. She's an absolutely wonderful young lady who's never ever been a problem in terms of her work ethic and her ability to get better and better every time she goes out. She leads by example. She's a quiet leader, but oh my gosh, for her, I'm absolutely thrilled. We lost Vicky Pearson to a knee injury, and so hopefully she'll be back next year. We'll have to see how her body recovers from that. So it was an up and down year. We lost two games to Alberta in Alberta on field turf, and the one to Victoria still stings because we had nobody to blame but ourselves. We played Calgary on their turf. Very good turf it was, and we lost 1-0. And I remember standing in that -15 temperature, and I'm not suggesting that was the reason, because it was -15 for both teams. But I remember standing there and looking at the kids and saying, I hope that really hurts, because when you don't show up to play, anybody can take you. And so that was a good lesson to learn. But since that Calgary game, we went undefeated, which is kind of neat.
Thanks again for your time and congratulations, and I hope you get some time to enjoy it.
Thanks very much, Wilson. I just looking at the faces of the players is enough reward.
Wilson Wong speaking with Hash Kanji, the head coach of the UBC women's field hockey team, following their 12th McRae Cup title. That's the CIS National Championship for women's field hockey, and doing it undefeated, Wilson.
Yeah, I think that for them it was quite the bounce back year. I think as we chatted about it, just the way that they were able to get over some of the adversity, I guess we'll say, during the season. I think for Hash, I think it was a very satisfying win in how they did it and what they overcame.
We'll take a break. When we come back on Wiener's Barbecue in the final half hour, we'll kind of go around the horn with some of the other stuff that's been going on.
Lots of other stuff.
Yeah, the women's rugby nationals were held here at UBC last weekend. The Thunderbirds earning a fifth place finish with a 27-0 win over the Western Ontario Mustangs in their final game on Sunday. So we'll recap that. We got some basketball, some soccer, and some volleyball and some hockey on the slate as well. So all that coming up on Wiener's Barbecue here on CITR.
Yeah, the state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a crowd. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
Uh-huh. You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. But I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver, CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
CITR is having a party. Let's get the word out.
Yo, Jenny, Suter is having a party. Pass it on.
So apparently, there's a winter-themed party going on.
No! You want the real scoop? CITR is putting on a show at the Gallery in the Sub on Thursday, November 19th. Peace and Walter TV will be playing with surprise DJs. The band performances will be broadcast live on Thunderbird Radio Hell, hosted by Ben Lai, with interviews between sets. It's only $4 to get in, and all proceeds raised will go towards CITR's annual fund drive. Doors open at 8 p.m., and the first band will go on at 9. So now that you know, be there.
And welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here in CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. Your home of the UBC Thunderbirds, and this is the show for your UBC Thunderbirds athletics. Wilson Wong here with Tyler Noble. We're filling in for Daryl Wiener. Hopefully he'll be back soon. We miss him.
Well, we certainly missed him and Mike on the hockey broadcast this last weekend.
They work well.
They do. I was funny. Myself and Chandler trying to fill the void. That's a lot of void to fill.
You guys work well, too.
Yeah, it was okay. The outcome on the ice was a different story, and we'll get into that a little bit later on in the program. We'll be speaking with the head coach of the men's hockey team, Milan Dragicevic. But more happy thoughts, and that is the fifth place finish for the women's rugby team at the Nationals held here at UBC last week.
Yeah, I think they were generally happy. I think they were a little disappointed because they just couldn't get over the hump in terms of beating one of the teams that they needed to beat that was seated higher than them in the pool standings. So basically they lost 18-0 to St. Francis Xavier in their first game. And it's tough. On the Friday, they actually played at 10 and then right after at 12:30. So they played a 50-minute game, I believe, at 10, lost to St. Francis Xavier, and then lost a 5-0 game to Guelph. So after losing both their games in pool play, they were relegated to their fifth-place game. And that in that game, they defeated, as you said earlier, Western Ontario 27-0. So what they ended up finishing fifth, and it was quite an emotional day for a lot of the seniors, the fifth-year seniors, and I do know that this is a graduating player.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin Harris, I chatted with her during the gold medal game, so here is my conversation with Caitlin Harris.
Caitlin, can you talk about how today's game went for you?
Well, it was really hard fought, and
and I think we all literally left our hearts on the field today, and just beating Western proves to us and to the national CIS tournament that there should be two berths Western teams at nationals.
You lost by 5 points to St. Francis Xavier. How do you feel about that result, knowing that they ended up playing in the third place game and playing for a medal?
It's heartbreaking. I think that at the St. FX game, we gave them the game because the majority, all of their points were capitalizing on our mistakes. So I think we just have to pull up our socks a little bit and adapt to what the ref has to say to us. And, you know, I don't know.
How would you describe how the tournament went for your team this year?
I think it was a roller coaster, and it brought our team closer together, and I think we proved to ourselves and proved to the tournament that we deserve to be here.
Tell me who's heckling you right now, or who was heckling you.
My teammates. They're making fun of me. It's okay. They do that a lot.
Now, why does that happen?
Because I may say stupid things sometimes, but it's just mostly Christine Mahan.
Yeah. After your last game against Western, it was pretty emotional for a lot of the players, the coaches. Can you talk about what you were thinking as you were playing that last game, the last game of your career for UBC?
Well, I know that we are all tired and we were really struggling to sort of maintain possession of the ball, and all you can think about is just keep moving forward and just like, well, we always say dig deep, and you just have to play through the pain and just dig deep and just keep working, because you're working for yourself, but you're working more for each other.
Did you play 5 years here? All right. So you played 5 years here at UBC. I know you haven't had a lot of time to think about it, but what are some of the things you'll remember most, and what are some of the stories you'll most want to tell when people ask you about playing rugby for UBC?
Wow, I don't know. It's just every year we think that we're going to lose so many graduating players and we're all going to go through this whole lull, but we always manage to pick up rookies and develop players, and I've actually been here for 6 years, so I've seen a lot of faces come in and out of the program, and I think that how far we've come as a women's rugby program is absolutely phenomenal. And I've been here through bad coaches, I've been here through no coaches, and I've been here through a great coach, so it's an amazing experience.
When you look back at those bad times where you didn't have a coach, say, how do you feel now leaving the program in a situation where, as you described it, you have a good coach, your team has just hosted the Nationals and it's played very well. How do you feel about leaving on such a high note?
I think it's amazing, and it's great for the rookies to sort of, that we set up this platform for them to keep going and keep moving the program and keep just moving forward, and so one day we can be in this gold medal match instead of sitting on the bleachers.
What's up after graduation for you?
I think I'm going to hang up my boots for a little bit and recuperate, but I think I might play some club rugby next fall in Vancouver.
And what about education-wise?
Well, I've just applied for a 9-month job at a legal advocacy program or a nonprofit, so we'll see how that goes. I'll find out next week. So,
congratulations on a great career here at UBC.
Thank you.
That's Caitlin Harris from the UBC women's rugby team. They finished fifth in the country after hosting the CIS Nationals. And yes, that was a little bit of heckling that she experienced.
That was fun.
Yeah, I think they call her Bluebird.
Okay.
I asked about why, but she refused to say why.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
And I in the interview, there was a mini mistake in there. I get the teams mixed up. They did lose to St. Francis Xavier by 18, not 3.
Right.
Or 5.
And that's what editing's for.
Yes, and yeah,
and that
there was
didn't help.
Little editing. Well, it's good. We get the you get the full experience of how much of a bumbling idiot I am sometimes.
This is an award-winning show here. Leslie McKenzie's up next.
Yeah, she's the coach of the women's team, and I chatted with her right after the game, and it was a neat experience because there was quite the emotional sort of team picture celebration at the end of the game, and Leslie was a little emotional at that point, but it was always nice to get sort of the coach's perspective on that, and so here's the second year coach of the UBC Thunderbirds.
I'm really, really satisfied with the way that we finished it. The girls have put a ton of work into this. We were, I think, maybe unlucky not to be able to put ourselves over the line to get ourselves into the semifinal round and show that we're a very competitive team in this tournament, but I think we've done that anyways. We've shown sort of the relative strength of Canada West is, like, we're a very powerful conference. The third seed coming in, we knew that we had a shot at the medal round. We didn't get there, but the completion today and the final score, especially with the no points allowed, was, I think, reflective of the work and the commitment they put in. They played with great intensity through the games. They put in a lot of work off-field, and I think just mentally, it's a hard game to play, but I'm really, really happy with what they brought to it today. So I'm elated, basically.
Can you talk a little bit more about today's game and how it went for you?
Yeah, well, we were sort of a product of our own good game management today. The ref showed early on that he was not going to be lenient on the kind of penalties that Western is sort of want to take. So they put themselves in a bit of a box there. And we showed really good game management skills when we were able to sort of tighten up what we were doing and sort of play to the ref and to the conditions. And the girls kept their composure really well. And the best kind of punishment is putting points on, so...
Can you talk about the time, the commitment, say the fifth year, the graduating players have put in over these past few seasons?
Absolutely. Having put in 5 years as a T-Bird myself, it's always sort of a catastrophic moment at the end of the game when you realize that you're not going to put that jersey on again. And I think the nature of rugby, it's a collision sport. It's a sport that you play in all kinds of conditions with people there that are physically and sort of emotionally backing you up. It makes for a very tight-knit group, and the girls are a family, so this kind of thing, when you have girls graduating, it's like your family's getting split up. But, to be cliched about it, they always have this memory. I mean, I remember my last game as a T-Bird, so, yeah. And they'll have a good one to remember it by.
I know the season's just ended, but when you look back, how do you think you'll remember this season?
Oh, it's my second season as head coach. Absolutely the best one yet. The group that I had to work with, the very strong-minded, very, very determined girls that were able to turn around a program and to take it to this level, fifth in the nation, in a short amount of time, they've put an immense amount of work in, and so sort of nothing but pride and respect for what the girls have put into it, and very lucky to be part of it.
And in the end, you're really not that far from, say, fourth or third in the nation.
No, we're not. And like I said, I think, a little bit more finish and we would have been playing for fourth or third easily in the nation. So the girls have seen what's possible and, this is always next year. We've got a really good group of rookies coming through and second and third year players. So, yeah. I think this will be a good experience for them to learn from and to sort of move onwards with our training.
Leslie McKenzie, head coach of the women's rugby team here at UBC, finishing fifth in the country at the CIS Nationals. They hosted that tournament this weekend. Lethbridge actually beat St. Francis Xavier 20-3 to win their third straight national championships. But I think UBC pretty happy with how they performed this weekend. I think the theme really, in terms of the repeating theme for a lot of the players, was, we showed that we belonged here. At this tournament. So great season for them, and congratulations to Leslie and all of the players, especially those who are graduating.
Changing gears now to basketball. Both UBC teams will be back in action at War Memorial Gym this coming Friday and Saturday versus Saskatchewan and Alberta, respectively. Games you can hear right here on CITR 101.9 FM. The men were off from conference play this past weekend, but the women had one up at SFU, Wilson.
Yeah, the big rivalry up at Burnaby Mountain. Two of the most successful teams of this decade in the CIS. And, of course, Simon Fraser coming in winning 37 straight games. And UBC, well, they played pretty well for three quarters, held the lead for after three quarters, just like so many times last season against SFU. But, again, the Clan come out and score 25 points in the fourth quarter, and they take the game. And UBC, they knew that it was coming, and one of those things about this SFU team is you know, when you win 38 times in a row, there are a lot of times where they don't play really that well for all of the game, yet they're still able to come out and take the win, and this seems to be one of those times.
Veteran Robin Buna scoring a team-high 15 points en route to a 67-59 victory, and UBC's Devin Lisson, the starting guard, didn't really mince words either about it afterwards.
Yeah, that was a great quote. Well, a great interview from her, but just you can sense the frustration and from her, and she was just really candid about why she was so frustrated, and you'll hear that in this interview that we did after the game.
This was a game where, like many of the games last year against SFU, stayed close for three quarters, had the lead coming into the final quarter, and SFU just sort of stepped it up, and UBC couldn't really do much to stop it. What did you see out there in this game, especially in that final quarter?
I just saw us not being able to make that push and SFU being able to do it. We let them score the way that we knew they could score. We let Robin Buna go left. That's where she wants to go. We let her hit a three. We let them do the rolls. We let Laurel get to the left side of the floor. I think we just next time need to tighten up and hold that throughout the whole game. And I don't know, I think we just kind of lost in that fourth quarter, and I think it was all our fault, not really.
In past games, similar situations where you played really well, had the lead going into the fourth. What kind of things did you learn from those past games that you tried to apply here?
Well, I guess it's kind of just the same thing. Last year, this happened every game, and every time we'd kind of say the same thing, and we just don't have that kind of will or someone just to take over the game. I think we went really stagnant on offense, and that's a huge thing. We let them, I don't know, just do their thing, and we knew that, and we just still weren't able to make that push. And I think as the season goes on, it's still pretty early. I think we'll be able to learn that throughout the season, and hopefully the next time we meet them, it'll be a different story.
As you said, looking for that person who is going to be decisive as the point guard, can you be that person?
I'd like to be, and I'd like to be able to step into that role. And I think in the end, I maybe went quiet a bit in the last few minutes, and I think I could have maybe made a bit more of a push. But I think there's a lot of people on our team that would be able to take over that role. I think there's four or five people that could any given night could step up and be that person. So,
I don't want to dwell on just the fourth quarter. A very good game for you and your teammates. Can you talk about how your team is sort of building towards the end of the season, how this game sort of will help in that?
Well, as you can see, SFU is number one in the country, so it's a great way to measure where we're at right now. And I think those first three quarters, we're in a good spot, but it's that last quarter we need to work on. And it's just always great to be able to play against the number one team in Canada just to measure up.
And what were some of the highlights for you that you saw out there for your team?
I think we can run the ball well. First bit, we had a lot of transition. We kind of got away from that. Big thing is pulling down the rebound, not letting second chance boards, and just getting out and being able to run. I think that's a big deal, and yeah.
And last question, how do you sort of regroup for Saskatchewan, Alberta?
Again, that's going to be another tough week, but I think we can learn a lot from this game, but like you said, don't dwell on it. We have two big games coming up. This game definitely prepared us for those games, and just look to win for next weekend.
Actually, I lied. Another question coming. Yeah. Just what kind of games can you expect against Alberta and Saskatchewan?
I think SAS, I don't know much about Alberta. I know they lost a lot of players, so hopefully we'll have more seniors and more experience maybe in that department. But I know that SASK is going to be a very tough team. They've had a very good preseason. They're ranked in the top 10 also, so it'll be also a good challenge for us to see where we're at with them.
Devin, listen, speaking with me after the game against SFU on Saturday, a 67-59 loss that drops UBC to a record of 1-1. They will be facing Saskatchewan and Alberta, as you heard Devin say, this weekend. Games you can hear on CITR 101.9 FM. And this is also the home of Wiener's Barbecue, the show you're listening to right now. And it's time for our final break here on Wiener's Barbecue.
My life is stereo, kind of cheaply made, though. How bad does it show?
CATR's fourth annual fund drive is just around the corner. From Thursday, November 12th to Thursday, November 26th, we'll be raising money to support another year of quality community radio. CATR only asks once every year for listeners to support the station. So think about it. How much is a year of CITR programming worth to you? It only comes around once a year, so remember to support CITR this fund drive.
Raised in hell, forged by fire and harder than drum steel, comes the new album from Three Inches of Blood, There Wait Thy Doom, featuring 11 hardcore, evil tracks from the biggest defenders of traditional heavy metal. There Wait Thy Doom is available in stores now.
Tyler Noble and Wilson Wong back with you on Wiener's Barbecue, filling in for Daryl Wiener, who's off again this week. About 13 more minutes in the show, and one of the subjects we'll cover in this remaining segment is UBC men's hockey. They dropped both their games this past weekend at home to the Alberta Golden Bears, a weekend set that started off with a little bit of promise in the first 40 minutes. They were in it in the Friday night game before losing 6-2 and then getting thumped in the second game by a score of 8-1. Joining us on the line is the head coach of the men's hockey team, Milan Dragicevic. I appreciate the time this afternoon.
No problem. Anytime for you guys.
Milan, basically, what happened against Alberta?
You know what? We started off really well on Friday. Just like you mentioned, we had, you know, great chances to score on Friday. We were up 2-1 after the first period, out playing them, out hitting them. And then, you know what? I think our guys got frustrated. We couldn't score. We couldn't capitalize on any power plays, and we got frustrated. And then they scored five quick goals, and, you know, those things don't happen. They shouldn't happen. And then on Saturday, you know what? We just made some bad mistakes. We didn't get the puck in deep. There's a lot of turnovers in the neutral zone, and they capitalized at the end. It was 5-1 going into the third period. And you know, when it's 5-1 and you have a long road ahead, you know, guys seem to take it upon themselves, and we made more mistakes, and it just didn't turn out the way we wanted it.
A discipline. In the Friday night game, there was some signs that maybe things were going to sort of slip away from control. John Flatters ended up getting a major penalty in a game misconduct late and couldn't play in the Saturday game. And the Saturday game itself was a little bit rougher all the way through. Are you concerned that your team is losing focus when the game gets a little bit lopsided?
Well, you know what? We have some players in our hockey team that were tough guys in the Western Hockey League and the OHL. This is what they're used to. Mm-hmm. They're used to fighting and scrapping when things are out of control. And it's a discipline issue. I'm not overly concerned about it because, you know, we've talked to our guys. We've addressed it with our players. It's not something that overly concerns me. I'm more concerned about the slashing and the hooking penalties. You know, however, we did lose Matt Pepe on Saturday. He's our best defenseman. You know, I thought it wasn't a great call, but what can you do? And we lost him for next Friday's game.
Yeah, that was an interference call that when we were doing the broadcast felt it was probably unwarranted as well, and then that led to a whole unraveling, a 10-minute misconduct, and et cetera. Moving forward, where do you go from here now? Is the heat being turned up a little bit, given that you're now outside the playoff picture? And we talked before the game on Friday that you know, getting points every weekend, even if it's just one in an overtime loss, is points that are very valuable. What's the approach now?
Well, the approach is to go back to basics and go over what we're good at. You know, we feel that we're still a very good forechecking team, a team that, you know, relies on putting the pucks on the net. You know, we have to create offense. We've got four goals in four games, and that's not enough. No matter how good your goaltenders play and keep you in there, you need to create offense, and we got to score goals at the right time. So the focus all week this week is, you know, is back to basics, making sure that everyone's kind of getting themselves ready to play, have good defensive positioning, have good sticks, and get that work ethic up to par.
This coming weekend on the road in Saskatoon facing the Saskatchewan Huskies for the first time since the playoff series last spring. You guys must be looking forward to that.
Well, we are. We're definitely looking forward to it. They knocked us out last year in the semifinals. And, you know, in years past, in the regular season, we split there the last 5 years. So it's a small barn. It's a smaller ice surface. It's more conducive to our style of play. You know, I know Saskatoon's been playing very well lately. They have a really good team, and they have a lot of offense. And it's just a matter of us playing discipline with our structure and making sure that we're extremely physical when we have the opportunity, but not get ourselves caught out of position and not taking bad penalties.
In both games this past weekend, your goaltender Francois Thuot had to be pulled. Certainly, I don't think that's directly reflective of his performance. There was a lot of unfortunate bounces that didn't go his way. Are you concerned that he's not being able to see the shots as cleanly as he should be?
Well, that's a concern. And then watching the video, they, you know, Alberta did score some long shots with traffic in front, and that's our defenseman's responsibility to get those guys cleared out, and we have to do a way better job. It's something we've been working on all week, is to let our goaltender see the shot. And you know, on the other end, we have to do a better job of hunting loose pucks in front of the net and getting traffic in front. And that's the way you can score now, is getting traffic, and we have to do a better job on both ends.
What did you think of the play of Jordan White? He played almost half the game on Saturday. I thought he looked pretty good, but your assessment?
Yeah, you know what? I thought he came in and he was tested early, and you know, it's his first minutes of really. You know, he played 4 or 5 minutes there on Friday, but I thought Saturday, you know, he played half the game and didn't look out of place. And you know, they scored some power play goals, like I said, long shots when he was screened. And you know, you want the goalie to battle, but you know, if they got two guys in front of the net, there's no way he can see it. So I think it's important that, you know, Jordan does get some ice time and play. But, you know, Frankie is our guy. You know, he's been here for, well, this is his fourth year, and he's our go-to guy. And, you know, we'll ride Frankie, and we'll see how he does this weekend.
All right, Coach, appreciate the time this afternoon. Good luck this weekend in the Prairies.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
All right, that's head coach Milan Dragicevic from the UBC men's hockey team.
And it'll be another tough test this weekend. I mean, going into Saskatoon, I mean, he talked a little bit about it, but it's going to be a tough road for this UBC team. And I think for them, you know, there's got to be the little goals that they have to reach. And for them, I think for that, over the next few weeks heading into the break, they've got to maybe sort of refocus, rechannel their energy into sort of just focusing on this on this short period before the break.
All right, changing gear now to a couple of teams that were off last weekend, those being the UBC volleyball teams, and it's really been two different tales for the men and the women. The women have been off to the best start you can possibly ask for, really, getting a three-set wins all the way through here so far. The men's team, though, struggling. The Halloween weekend getting swept by the Trinity Western Spartans in Langley.
Yeah, and so for the men's team, a 1-3 start in four games. Not quite to what head coach Richard Schick has been or was hoping for. And for him, this past weekend was a bye weekend. And so for him, it was really a chance to regroup and sort of gather his troops and sort of refocus on sort of getting back on track and sort of making sure that this season doesn't sort of spin out of control here. There are, you know, a couple of weaknesses that everyone sort of acknowledges. They're maybe missing that sort of power hitter on the outside, and you know, they've lost Steve Gotch, a very good setter, but you know, it was encouraging for them to get that split against Winnipeg, but losing to Trinity Western was in two matches wasn't quite the result he was hoping for. And so I chatted with him about just how the season has been so far and the types of patterns and trends that he's seeing in his team.
in every one of our matches in the regular season anyways, we've started off a guns a-blazing, and we just haven't been able to sustain our play over a longer period of time. And it's just like hockey, you got to play for the full 60 minutes, right? If you only play for 58 minutes against a good team, you know, chances are you could make a mental error, and next thing you know, one's in the net and you lose the game. And that's kind of, I think that we could play for a little bit longer than we have been. We've come out, we've won the first set in every single one of our matches. We've started the second set well, but we've petered off towards the end of that. And so we're striving for that type of consistency, but definitely not the results that we were looking for or expected. And with a weekend off here, it gives us some time to kind of rest up. We do have some injuries just like everybody else, but at the same time, I think that our bye weekend couldn't come at a better time.
So that's Richard Schick, UBC men's volleyball head coach, talking about how his team has played so far and maybe some of the disturbing patterns he's seeing in his team so far this season.
Yeah, their last action Saturday, November 1st at Trinity Western, losing that one in four sets, 20-25, 25-22, 25-20, 25-14. Charlie Stewart led the Thunderbirds with 13 kills that night. Robert Bennett also hitting double figures with 10. As the team, the Birds had only hit for 162 in that match, notching 46 kills on 130 attacks. So still room for improvement, Wilson.
Yeah, and it's early in the season, but... Yep. You know, as a team like UBC, they've already faced two teams that have been ranked in the top 10. So for them, you know, maybe for them, they need to take advantage more of these matches, you know, splitting instead of losing both. And for UBC, I think they've had some time. They've appreciated the time to regroup. And Coach Richard Schick talked about, hey, you know, just refocusing here and making sure that we are good to go for the next set of matches here.
As for the women, much more positive story. They swept the Winnipeg Westmen on the home opening weekend in three sets both nights. A three-set win in the first match against Trinity Western on Halloween. And then needing a five-setter to defeat the Trinity Western Spartans on the Saturday. Or check that, that's Halloween night. The night before, the 30th, was the three-set. I'm mixing up my dates here. Three-set on the Friday and five sets to beat the Trinity Western Spartans in the rematch. 25-22, 25-27, 26-24, 26-28. So some extra points there. Yeah. And then UBC prevailing 15-13 in the fifth and deciding set. So they're 4-0 to start the season. And looking like they're the favorite to three-peat so far.
And isn't that an amazing even notion to think about?
Yeah.
Because over the last few years, you know, there was always that talk of this women's volleyball program being, you know, at a certain level, being good enough to make the Nationals, and the amazing streak that they had getting to Nationals, but never quite coming up on top. And then all of a sudden we're talking three-peats and number one rankings and all that. So it's an amazing thing to have seen the way this squad, this program has stepped it up. Oh, I'm losing my mouth and tongue here, but it's amazing to see how they've been able to move up a notch or two in the past few seasons, despite being already at a very high level.
Jeff Sargent spoke with the senior libero from the UBC Thunderbirds, Claire Hanna, about the season so far.
How have you seen the start so far? I mean, obviously, it's gone very well, picking up right where you left off at last year's national championship.
Yeah, well, actually, typically in years previous, like, UBC typically has really slow starts. So I've been impressed with us so far. We had some really tough games against Trinity last weekend, and on the second night, I went to five, and we crushed them the first night in three. And so that actually happened the exact same story like last year, except we actually lost the second night. And so I feel like we're one step ahead in our season than we were last year. So far it's been a great start, and we're 4-0, so that's awesome.
And why do you think the quick start this year is as compared to the past?
You know, that's a really good question. We've kind of talked about that with the team, and I'm not quite sure, but I think that we have such a core group of girls coming back, like returnees. Like, we only lost two starters from last year. Not that they're saying they're easy to replace, but there's a lot of focus, and the communication that's been there for the past, like, 3 years with all the girls has just gotten stronger. And so maybe it's just that we've got a lot more focus and desire this year than other years.
It was something I had asked Doug about a few weeks ago, but you know, now everyone in the CIS is basically looking for to you to three-peat. You know, I mean, two back-to-back championships. I mean, that's a pretty rare feat in itself, right? And you know, does that put added pressure on you and the whole team?
I think it does, but I don't think we're feeling it yet. I think we're going to feel that starting in January. Obviously, being the hunted is harder than being hunting. Does that make sense? In that, I wish we were trying to vie for that number one spot, but being in that number one spot makes it tougher on us. But I think that, like, we're going to rise to the challenge and just see it as a different kind of challenge to overcome this year.
A bye weekend here. Is that a good thing for the rest? I guess, but you know, you're on such a roll. Would it maybe have been better to just keep going?
You know, this bye is coming. Like, the way our season set out this year is that the teams we're playing the first half are significantly easier than the ones we're playing in the second half, and so the fact that we have this bye in between some weaker teams is maybe like indifferent. If this was coming in between playoffs, then it'd be a different story. But I think right now a lot of girls have midterms. A couple people are injured. It's coming pretty appropriately.
And that's Claire Hanna, the member of the UBC women's volleyball team, I believe, speaking to us on from a SkyTrain. What do you think?
Maybe the bus. There was a little bit too much noise there for a SkyTrain, but we heard the ding, ding, ding sound there. So she gives us an interview no matter where she is.
Yeah, so we appreciate that. Thank you for all of those guests who have sacrificed to talk to us here on Wiener's Barbecue.
Claire Hanna getting 14 digs in the defensive effort in that five-set win over Trinity Western on Halloween as we wrap up.
Yeah, we want to thank our guests. So many of them have come on today. Athletic Director Bob Phillip, CKNW Sports Director Jim Mullen, Robin Pendleton from the women's field hockey team, and then in some of our previous interviews, we chatted with Hash Kanji, Leslie McKenzie, Caitlin Harris, and Claire Hanna and Richard Schick.
Should mention, we did invite Ted Gavaya, the now fired head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds football team, to come on with us. He did elect to decline an interview, but certainly we do want to thank him for being very gracious with his time to us here at CITR. He always did interviews, whether they were live or on the phone or during games or whatever. He was very much flexible with us and a class act in terms of dealing with us as the campus media. So we thank him for his efforts and understand that maybe he wouldn't want to come on and talk about the firing.
Well, absolutely. Here's a guy who's said yes basically every time we've asked. So, you know, you can't ask anything more from a guy, anyone, when you're in our position.
All right, that does it for us. Tyler Noble and Wilson Wong, thank you for being with us.
Hope that was fun for those of you who listened.
Flex Your Head is coming up next here on CITR 101.9 FM.